It's At the Letters for Thursday, January 7th, a very busy one in the MLB world. My name's Arden Zwelling, joined as always by Ben Nicholson-Smith. Our producer this week is Michael Mayers, and Mike Tassoni, as always, is with us handling the video, getting us up on YouTube. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. Ben, the big news today, Francisco Lindor is not going to be a Toronto Blue Jay. He's going to be a New York Met, as the Mets swung the big deal for Lindor and Carlos Carrasco today, getting back a couple big league infielders, couple pretty far off minor league lottery tickets, if you want to call them that. Ben, I think a lot of Blue Jays fans were expecting that Francisco Lindor might be patrolling shortstop at in Dunedin,
wherever,
maybe to begin
somewhere.
Begin this season, but eventually at Rogers Center for a lot of years to come. So obviously a lot of disappointment there. How do you think the Blue Jays fans should feel about the fact that Francisco Lindor is going to be a New York Met?
Wow. I mean, what a day. I'm still kind of taking in all of the information here. There's the Cigano deadline, of course, Lindor trade. That's massive. It's probably, and I was thinking about this as I was writing today, it's got to be the biggest move we're going to see this offseason, right? Like, regardless of what happens with Springer or LeMay, I mean, those guys aren't quite the caliber of player that Lindor is, really.
The biggest trade, I would say. I mean, it depends. If Trevor Bauer signed like a 6 or 7 year, like, you know, massive 9-figure contract, how do you measure that up versus a Lindor trade?
Right. Yeah. But I mean, this is up there. It's a massive deal. And yeah, as for how Blue Jays, I mean, how Blue Jays fans respond, I think based on some of the ones that I've heard from, it seems like today has been a bit of a tough day, understandably. And I never, I think both of us, Arden, we never tell fans how to respond. So if you're upset, you're upset. I mean, that's part of the beauty of being a fan. I think, you know, how I interpret this is it's one option crossed off the board. It's the very best option. Lindor, I think, is the very best player who was available or who will be available this winter. So the very best option is crossed off the board. But did we realistically think that Lindor was ever likely to land in Toronto anyway? It was certainly a possibility. I'm not saying it wasn't a possibility. Okay, so it was. Yeah. But when I say likely, I mean, like, literally, was it ever like over 50%? You know,
I thought it was a real possibility.
Yes.
I don't know if I ever put a percentage on it, but I really did think it was a good possibility, just because I know that the Blue Jays front office likes him a great deal. And because they were looking to improve on the infield, clearly, and because they made an offer for him last offseason. Like, it's not like the first time they tried to acquire him. So, like, I thought it was pretty, realistic.
Yes, realistic, totally. And I'm not trying to rewrite history and say this was never a possibility. It was a possibility. And it was the best possibility. And now it's off the table. And so at this point, the Blue Jays, I would caution people to say that this is like disaster, because almost everyone in this slow moving offseason is still available. So you still have Real Muto. They're in on him. You still have Bauer. They met with him since we've last recorded a podcast. They still have LeMahieu and Springer. And those guys are very much in the mix. And if anything, we'll get to this, but if anything, Springer might be a little more available to the Blue Jays right now. So, if you're a Blue Jays fan and Thursday you're thinking, all right, Lindor's still available and the Jays might get Cigano. And then at the end of the day, Lindor's gone and Cigano's gone. So I understand it's disheartening. Those are legitimately good players and the Jays aren't going to get them. So if you're a fan and that's upsetting, I totally understand.
Do you think that, and the answer to this question is yes, do you think that the Blue Jays could have beaten this offer that eventually landed Francisco Lindor? And the answer is yes. And it's always tough, right, to play the equivalency game. And it's actually really tough here because there aren't really perfect comps for the Blue Jays. Because look, the big thing that Cleveland gets out of this is two like major league infielders today. Right? Like, Andrés Giménez, like, came into the season as a top 30 MLB prospect, came into 2020, and then like proved it at the big league level. The Blue Jays don't really have that guy. You know, you could kind of sub in Jordan Groshans, I guess, but he hasn't played the MLB, at the big league level, whereas Giménez has proven it. Then you take Ahmed Rosario, who is another guy who, his prospect shine is kind of worn off a little bit, but he has proven that he's a capable guy at the big league level. He hasn't been quite as good as people thought he might be, but he can play several positions on the infield. He can run. The bat was better in 2019 than in 2020, but there isn't a perfect comp there for the Blue Jays. You could say like maybe Kevin Biggio, But, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily a direct line.
I think Biggio is better than Amon Rosario for sure.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of hard even to create, an equivalent package for the Blue Jays. So they were going to have to beat the quantity that Cleveland received with likely quality. So that would be, I would suggest, like two premier prospects. So think like Groshans plus Manoa. Or if Cleveland absolutely needs big league talent now, which it seems like they kind of do, and it seems like they do want to continue to contend, like they're sort of trying to Tampa Bay Rays their way through this and decreasing payroll substantially while staying competitive. Yep. And they should in that division, really. So then maybe that means you got to throw in a Gurriel. So maybe it's Groshans and Gurriel plus a super young prospect who's pretty far away, like a Klofenstein or somebody like that. I mean, to me, that would be kind of the equivalent package, but then that comes down to how Cleveland values those guys, whether they want the quality over quantity package. We've seen a lot in the past. This is an organization that typically actually goes quantity over quality in these trades. It's not, you know, as easy as saying, well, the Blue Jays could have beaten this. I mean, yeah, they could have offered Austin Martin, right? Or Nate Pearson, and that would have easily beaten it. But, you know, when in comparing packages, like, I don't know if it lines up that evenly. What I do know is the Blue Jays have made offers in the past for Francisco Lindor. Clearly they weren't able to consummate a deal with Cleveland. I bet you they know exactly what they could have offered to make that deal happen. And I'd say that price just proved prohibitive.
Yeah. And we'll see if they, you know, if the Mets are able to extend Lindor, because to me, that's one of the big variables here. And one that obviously would have informed the Blue Jays' interest. I mean, if they thought that Lindor was set on testing free agency, as obviously is his right as a player on the brink of that threshold, then maybe you're just not as inclined to give up a lot. I don't know. That's total. I'm just presenting the question rather than an answer to it. But I do think that, you know, the Mets are going to have to answer that question now. And that would have been at the forefront of the Blue Jays thinking.
That's a huge question that we don't have an answer to is can you extend this guy? We don't know how Francisco Lindor, you know, feels about an extension in Toronto. We don't know how he feels about spending the next 8, 9, 10 years in Toronto. We don't know how his family feels about that, where they want to live. We don't know how much pressure Francisco Lindor is feeling to test free agency as a member of MLBPA's executive subcommittee. I mean, this is, you know, one of the most influential players in the game within the union. So that comes with a certain level of, you know, responsibility probably isn't the right word, but, you know, just a little bit of maybe added pressure to really leverage your status as an elite talent in this game as much as possible to secure the largest deal possible in order to be that, you know, that high tide that raises all other boats. So, you know, with the Blue Jays where they are right now, I just don't think you are paying the price it would have taken to acquire Francisco Lindor and Carrasco as well, by the way, in this deal, who is like not a throw into this deal, like a very real legit starting pitcher. I don't think you're paying that price if you don't really feel strongly that you're going to be able to extend Lindor.
Yeah. I mean, evidently the Jays did not feel that they were going to match Cleveland's price. Like, I think, you know, in some alternate world, we're recording a podcast where the Blue Jays did do that. And I think, you know, if the Jays had,
tone.
Yeah. I mean, if the Jays had offered, let's say it was Groshans and Manoa and Santiago Espinal and Klofenstein, and then that was it. And they got Carrasco and Lindor for that. I mean, I think I would be saying that's a good trade for the Jays, because you can kind of figure it out. Like, is he going to stay long-term? Who knows? Carrasco, at least, is a really good pitcher. Lindor obviously is a 5-win player anytime he takes the field. So there's real value in 2021, regardless of what happens beyond that, to having his age 27 season. So I love this deal for the Mets. I think if the Blue Jays had paid an equivalent price, I think that would have been fine personally, but you know, they did not.
I just think for the Blue Jays, it had to be about more than just 2021.
It always is.
Right.
Yeah.
The Blue Jays are, you know, they're a decent team for 2021. Like, it's not unreasonable to expect them to, you know, contend for the postseason, to return there and, you know, to win, you know, 82, 83 games maybe in a 162 game schedule, which we are very unlikely to get, but we can work off of that. But I don't think that the Blue Jays are a Francisco Lindor away from contending for an AL East title and contending for championships. And like, I do wonder if sometimes people lose sight of the fact that the Blue Jays are still on the upward trajectory of this quote unquote rebuild. Like they're still coming out of it, you know, like they aren't reaching the apex yet. Like they're still moving up. So, you know, what we have seen from them is that in a 60 game season with an expanded playoff field, they can earn a wild card spot and get absolutely demolished by the Tampa Bay Rays. Like that's where they are. And I don't think adding one Francisco Lindor to that mix all of a sudden makes them like AL East favorites. You know, I think it's a Francisco Lindor and a George Springer and a Trevor Bauer, you know, or and internal breakouts and a whole bunch more depth, by the way, because guys are going to get hurt. Guys are going to underperform. So Lindor had to be part of a long-term play for the Toronto Blue Jays, like a next 7 or 8 years play, which is why the extension was absolutely paramount. And if the Blue Jays didn't feel confident in signing him to one, then I think it is perfectly fine to continue on with, oh, by the way, Bo Bichette as your shortstop, who is probably the best player on the team right now, while you continue to develop Jordan Groshans and Austin Martin as young infielders who could have really big bats at the MLB level and could be here sooner than later. And then maybe if you need to dip back into the infield market, hey, next offseason, Correa, Seager, Trevor Story, Baez, whole bunch of guys are going to be on the market, whole bunch of alternatives there for you.
Maybe Lindor. Maybe we'll be having this conversation about him in 12 months. Who knows? I mean, yeah, I think it's true. It's, you know, this team is multiple pieces away. They're not just on the brink of turning around with one signing, no matter how good that signing is. And, you know, to be fair, the Blue Jays are still trying to add those multiple pieces. And I agree with you when you say it's perfectly fine to be in the spot that they're in. It's not better than that. It's not worse than that. Like it's, you know, they're kind of in, they're basically where they started. You know, when we've been talking about this offseason for a long time now. They've added Robbie Ray, which great, but that's all. Like they've cut loose Travis Shaw and AJ Cole, and they've added Robbie Ray. And other than that, nothing, you know? So they have a lot of work to do. They're not even close to where they need to be. They're not that great of a team right now. They're a good team. They're an ascending team. They're not a bad team, which, you know, we've talked about some bad Blue Jays teams on this podcast, but they're not a great team. And so, you know, they have a lot of options. I feel like I'm stating the obvious here, but, you know, they have a lot of options. One of them was cut off. The best of those options is cut off. And now they have a lot of other ones that they can explore in the course of the next few months. But I will say just real quick here, I do want to just say, I love this trade for the Mets. Like for the Mets, this is awesome. So good for them.
Sure. And so as it pertains to the Mets and the Blue Jays, we know those two teams have been heavily interested in George Springer. Would you say that the Francisco Lindor trade makes it more likely that the Mets go after George Springer and sign him to a contract? Or does it make it less likely that they sign George Springer?
Man, this has been like the topic of my thoughts for the last few hours here. I still don't know that I have a clear answer. I did find it interesting that Andy Martino of SNY, who's very plugged into the Mets, reported on Thursday afternoon that the Mets still might have some interest in Springer, but are now less likely to sign him now that they have added Lindor and Carrasco to their books. Their payroll now is at about 177 in commitments. CBT is 210, and Martino says that the Mets are kind of free to go up to about 190. So if you look at those numbers, they're definitely going to have to move some pieces if they're going to add George Springer.
So they will not spend to the luxury tax.
That's what
the suggestion. Yeah,
that's what, because I just quote tweeted Martino, and then he replied to me saying they're good to go to 190. So I'm like, okay, interesting.
All right. happening as we record. Interesting.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's an interesting piece of information if it's true, which
super interesting.
I believe it to be, because that would pretty much say that the Mets are very much on the outside looking in then for Springer, and that would seemingly position the Blue Jays as favorites.
No, that changes everything. Because as we were going to, you know, get to this in a couple of minutes about kind of recalibrating expectations for George Springer, and this, you know, let's layer it in right now. You know, we had been kind of operating under an assumption that Springer would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 5-125 on a deal. It seems like that might have been a little light you know, and some of the reporting you've done and some of the stuff that we're hearing even out of New York. I mean, you had said, it could be more like 150, some stuff coming out of New York recently that's like, how about 175? So it seems like maybe 125 over five ain't going to get it done. However, if the Mets are no longer in, and if the Mets like can't, you know, are going to have to, and look, maybe they trade a Conforto, right? Like if you're out of Springer, like that can make sense. So maybe you trade a Conforto. Maybe
or Nimmo, or I guess Conforto probably makes the most out of those outfielders they have, right?
He'd probably be making the most for them, right? So that could like free up the money. I don't know. Maybe if you're Steve Cohen, like you just start writing some checks, right? You know, because look, you know, if you're really pushing to win a World Series right now, which it seems like they are, if they're really pushing to put their club over the top, the Mets should go get George Springer.
Yeah.
Like they should, like think about the division they play in. You got the Atlanta Braves in that division who are one of the best young teams in baseball. We know the Washington Nationals can spend and want to be good. And they still have some very, very good pitchers in that organization. And I don't think that the Phillies hired Dave Dombrowski to tear things down and to rebuild. So it's going to be a competitive division. So if you're the Mets, you got to keep pushing and like put this thing over the top. But, you know, on the other hand, they have some interesting sort of payroll hoops to jump through coming up, because they have, as we mentioned, like Conforto pending free agent, Stroman's going to be a free agent, Syndergaard's going to be a free agent. So there might be some more commitments upcoming in terms of extensions. And like you said, they're already pretty close to the luxury tax. Like DeGrom makes a whole ton of money. You know, they got Carrasco's money on books now. Yeah, you're going to have to try to extend Francisco Lindor, which ain't going to be cheap. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of talking my way around to seeing it from both sides. I guess. I'm like you. I don't know where I land on this.
Yeah, I have looked at it through a few different lenses to this point. I think where I land is it's good for the Jays. Now, good for the Jays only matters if it actually leads to a deal. And we've seen, not just this year, but we've seen over the years, they can have serious interest in a player and have it not result in a deal. So I'm not going to be surprised if I wake up one day and, you know, George Springer is a National or something like that. Like it just won't shock me. But I think if we're looking at it as objectively as we can, and that's probably an impossibility, both for, I'll speak for myself, for me and probably for a lot of our listeners, it's probably really hard to be truly objective here. But just given that we watch so much more Blue Jays, we're so much more focused on the Blue Jays. But I do think that to the extent that I can look at this objectively, I think the Blue Jays are as well positioned as any team to sign Springer, and probably better than the Mets and probably better than any team. So they have to be considered still in that mix. We know they like Springer. And, you know, my sense is, and I've said this in a couple other places, but my sense is that the Blue Jays value him comfortably at 125. And that they would go to 125 without, you know, being too perturbed by that. And so the question is, how much higher than that do you go? And like, I don't see them signing, like I don't see it going, the Jays signing him for 29 times seven or something. Like, I don't see that. But even though he is a case, by the way, as we've discussed, for, you know, an Anthony Rendon type AAV, if you look at their numbers side by side. But I don't see the Jays going to 35 times six or 29 times seven. I just don't see that happening. But could it be 28 times five? Like, that really wouldn't shock me.
What we know about the Blue Jays is that they're very disciplined in their valuations, and they're very disciplined in free agency. And so before they ever even engaged with George Springer, they would have established a pretty clear walkaway point that they would say, yeah, we're not going beyond this upper limit of our in negotiations. And like, walkaways are, they're good process, you know, they strip away some of the emotion and you know, you mentioned being objective and subjective, like some of that subjective bias that can creep in when, like, hey, you've been up all night and you're seeing your alternatives like go away, and you've been negotiating, going back and forth, and it's emotional and intense, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, fine, right? And you're just making a mistake. Like, those walkaways like allow you to be, you know, to guard against making those mistakes. But MLB free agency often isn't kind to the disciplined and to the rational, like the famous Andrew Friedman quote, if you're rational about every free agent, you'll finish third on every free agent. And that's like particularly true at the top of the market, where George Springer obviously resides, where the Blue Jays are looking to operate. Like oftentimes it's like Toronto real estate, man. Like if you want something really good, there comes a time where you kind of have to extend yourself and make an offer that makes you a little bit uncomfortable. Otherwise somebody else is going to get the house. So, you know, do you really think that, cause it sounds like 5-125 might not get it done. So do you really think that the Blue Jays will go beyond that if Springer wants more like 150, 175, and he can make a reasonable case based on Rendon?
Yeah, and he can make a reasonable case. And I think, you know, it's like when I look at their numbers side by side, and, you know, you can find this on sportsnet.ca where there's, you know, the numbers are there. It's reasonable. Of course, it's also academic. Like that point might be good, but it also doesn't matter unless it persuades an actual team in that market to respond. And we all know that this market is very different. Of course, the pandemic affects things. Revenues have really affected the eagerness on the part of teams to spend. That I think that much is indisputable. There's a whole other question to be, or discussion to be had around finances and MLB owners and accountability. But at the very least, we can say that teams are not as eager to spend right now. So that might mean that guys take a hit on years, on AAV. We're kind of expecting, based on, you know, what we're hearing so far, that the top guys still will get paid, but that's not a certainty until it happens either. And so I guess that's a long way of saying, I do think that the Blue Jays would go over that threshold. I don't think that they're going to go to, like, this is total speculation. Okay, I'm just guessing right here, but I think that their final walkaway number would be under 150. And I think it would be over 135. But that's I'm guessing. Like that's pretty much just guessing there.
Yeah.
But I you know, I've been told, like, I have a pretty clear sense from other people in the industry that they would be willing to be a very serious bidder for Springer. Like, that's not eyewash. Like, I think that if the Mets back out and they're not in, like, there might be a path to a deal with the Jays there.
Springer needs leverage is the thing. And if this is going to dissuade the Mets from, you know, bidding top dollar for him, like, that hurts him, which sucks. And we've been, you know, talking about this a lot through the lens of teams. But like, to look at it through the lens of like George Springer, like, that sucks for him. Cause if it's only really been the Mets and Blue Jays involved to this point, and now if he's losing the Mets as leverage to use against the Blue Jays, well, it's going to be hard for him to get up to that 150, 175 range that he wants to be in, that he has an academic case to be in. And like we all I was looking at this the other day, we all forget George Springer was one of the like most grievous victims of service time manipulation. Like we talk about Chris Bryant and other guys, but like look up what George Springer did in like the year before he made his MLB debut. Like he absolutely demolished AA and AAA pitching. Like I'm talking about an over 1000 OPS, stayed healthy the entire year, like played a great center field. He was a college draftee, so at that point he was like, you know, 23, like for sure a major leaguer, like for sure. And what did the Astros do in 2014? They sent him back to AAA for 2 weeks at the beginning of the season, like exactly classic. 13 games, like classic case. Yeah. And meanwhile, like they were playing like LJ Hose in the outfield at the big league level, you know, like they're playing guys that were going to be out of the league in a year and probably wouldn't be in the league if they weren't on, you know, an Astros team that had been tanking. Like his service time was absolutely like heinously manipulated, and they got 7 years out of him instead of the six that they should have gotten. And yes, like Springer was super two, and in his final year with the Astros, he was, you know, I don't know offhand, but I'm sure it was around $20 million that he was making, and through arbitration, he did fine. Like nobody has to feel really bad for him, but he could have hit and should have hit free agency a year earlier than he did. So like, just looking at it from a player perspective, like George, go get your money, man. Like get your 150, get your 175, get every last cent that they are going to give you. Like get every dime, get every contract perk, get your suite on the road, get your parking spots for family members at whatever ballpark you're gonna be playing out of. Like, you know, friggin' shake Steve Cohen by his ankles and like every last hedge fund dime, get him out of there, because For that guy to have had his service time manipulated coming into the league and now to have finally gone to free agency, and every team in the league is crying poor and saying, oh, I have these revenues, like we just can't spend on talent anymore, and to not have multiple bidders for a really good franchise center fielder, you know, demoralizes me from the player perspective. So go get paid, George, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I see that. And I think, you know, it's, you never know when there's going to be a late bidder for one of these players. And, you know, I think we don't know who that would be. And I don't know anything more than what I'm saying. You never know. George Springer's really good. He would help a lot of teams. So you never know. And if it is just the Blue Jays, then maybe they don't actually have to get to that final walkaway number. You know, let's say for argument's sake, they had earmarked, all right, we could go to 135, but their offer on the table to them is, for argument's sake, 125. Maybe you just kind of leave it there and let it sit for a while and see what happens.
We shall see. Let's step away and come back and round up some of the other happenings around MLB and how they impact Blue Jays, all that, so much more when we continue on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Swelling, Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers this week are Michael Mayers and Mike Tassoni. Ben, it is not only Francisco Lindor that the Blue Jays have missed out on this week. Also, a couple of Pacific Rim players who were, well, one of them's coming over to MLB. The other one's going to go back to Asia. Ha-Seong Kim and Tomoyuki Sugano, two players the Blue Jays had interest in, two players that were led to believe the Blue Jays bid on, and two players that are going to play for other teams in 2021. Let's start with Sugano because it's just kind of top of mind because it kind of came right down to the deadline here on Thursday, January 7th at 5 o'clock, with Sugano actually choosing to go back to NPB. And this sort of negotiation was interesting to watch play out. There was quite a bit of it happening publicly. I promise you there was like a very good reason that the extremely specific contract details that Sugano had on the table from the Omiuri Giants were made as public as they were. The Giants offering him a 4-year deal with 3 opt-outs, which mean that he can you know, basically just do this all over again next winter and the winter after that and winter after that if he really wants to. You know, he was telling the industry, hey, I've got leverage, I've got a good option on the table, you need to meet my price or I'm going to go back to Japan. And clearly MLB teams were not willing to blink on what Sugano was looking for. What do you kind of make of how this all ended up, and should the Blue Jays have extended themselves further than they did?
Well, I mean, to answer that second one would probably require more familiarity with Sugano than I honestly haven't really watched a ton. I know the numbers look great. And he's the 2-time winner of their starting pitching award for the best starting pitcher. So that's a good starting point. And he's just 31 years old. So there's presumably some good years left there for Sugano. Yeah, it's another interesting one. And it ties into what we were just talking about with George Springer, because, you know, I think in this case, the Blue Jays clearly had interest in Sugano. And according to some of the reporting, they even went so far as to make an offer. I believe Ken Rosenthal reported that their offer was considered a strong bid. So they were there, they had some interest, but again, when push came to shove, and obviously Wasserman, his agency, was trying to push that along and trying to seemingly, you know, get some of those more enticing offers in at the last minute, but evidently the Blue Jays did not budge their offer, or did not budge their offer enough to entice him to sign in Toronto. So it's a classic example, right, of this is a team that likes a player to a point, and then to another point they're going to say, all right, we're going to go and try to upgrade our pitching staff in other ways.
Opportunities and alternatives, man. That's what it comes down to.
I know.
And leverage too, right? And look, if Sugano didn't have MLB leverage, I don't see why the Blue Jays should have been out there negotiating against themselves. You know, if his leverage is I'm going to go back to NPB, and it's like, okay, fine. You know, that, like, I don't think that would be enough to get the Blue Jays to budge. You know, if it was, hey, the Red Sox are actually offering me, you know, X amount more than you are, okay, maybe that would have been different. But also maybe the Blue Jays were just at their walkaway and maybe they were just going to be disciplined about it. And, you know, like it gets back to, you know, if you're going to be rational about every free agent, yeah, you can finish second even to NBB teams, apparently. Yeah. So, where this hurts for the Blue Jays is that there aren't a lot of great free agent starting pitching options. You know, it's kind of right now it is Bauer in like a tier of his own on this starting pitching market. And then there is quite a steep drop off to the second tier of, I mean, is Odorizzi kind of the second, you know, I mean, mate, you Hendricks, yeah. If we're talking, you know, just strict starting pitching. I mean, Odorizzi, you know, like there's not, yeah.
I know
every time on Walker.
Yeah. But, Tanaka is in that.
Oh yeah.
Mix.
Tanaka. Yeah.
Paxton, I guess. Like every time I'm typing this for whatever reason, I always think I'm forgetting someone.
It feels like you are, right?
Yeah. Like there's got to be someone who's, you know, between Bauer and these other pitchers. Not that they're not, you know, skilled pitchers, but it just for a free agent class, it really does drop off pretty quickly.
And I think Sugano would have been like the second best pitcher available after Bauer on, you know, as a free agent. Like, I don't think that I can't think of somebody who, you know, if Gausman had hit the open market, yeah. Like, I guess you could have put him in there. Yeah, if Stroman had hit the open market, certainly. But those guys didn't. And they did qualifying offers. And, you know, maybe with the way free agency is going, it kind of makes some sense that they took their qualifying offers and good for them. But it would have been interesting to see Sugano make the jump and see how he would have fit in with the Blue Jays. You know, it's I think that Shun Yamaguchi obviously provides a bit of a cautionary tale of the risk there, you know, as does, you say, Kikuchi with Seattle, yeah. Who like it by all and you know, from some of the reporting, it seems like Sugano wanted a deal approaching Kikuchi's, which was 4 years, $56 million, and Kikuchi has gone to Seattle and given up a whole bunch of home runs and hasn't had a ton of success. You know, Blue Jays fans are familiar with how Shun Yamaguchi's first year went and trying to make the jump from NPB to MLB competition. And there's, you know, it's not just facing better hitters, but it's actually pitching with a different ball,
yeah.
Which is, you know, an adjustment. And, you know, it's pitching on a different schedule as well, particularly for starters. Starters in NPB pitch once a week. They have a mandated off day, which is something that like MLB should actually look into, is that like every team gets an off day on Monday sort of thing. But that's how MPB schedules work. So it's a 6-man rotation and you know which day of the week you were pitching every week. So it's a more compact schedule. It changes your routines in between starts. And this isn't even to touch on like the obvious lifestyle adjustments that go from living in Asia to living in North America. So you really never know like how a guy will respond, how a guy will fare until he makes that jump. Like obviously it was not an issue for Yu Darvish, was not an issue for Masahiro Tanaka. So you can find examples of guys who made that leap and Maeda. Were successful, right? And yeah. Examples of guys who made that leap and struggled and were challenged by it. And it looks like we aren't going to find out this year how Sugano would fare, but it looks like we might find out after next year if he opts out of the Giants deal.
Yeah, he certainly got some chances to come back over here, so maybe we will. But it's, you know, it's like any group of players, right? It's like, you know, if you get burned by drafting one lanky high school lefty, are you never going to draft a high school lefty again? I mean, that would kind of cut you off from some pretty good players if you don't do that. So yeah, I think that it's, you know, obviously Yamaguchi is a cautionary tale, and yet Sugano seemed to be positioned to make that adjustment more smoothly, to provide more value at the major league level. The Blue Jays clearly felt that he could have helped them. And when you look at their rotation and kind of the state that it's in right now, it's hard to disagree. Even without the benefit of, you know, having watched Sugano extensively, anyone who could post a 1.97 ERA in Japan could probably help this Blue Jays rotation. And then so now, you know, they do start, you know, there's obviously the trade market too, which is very interesting with names like Luis Castillo and Sonny Gray. They're out there missing someone. But yeah, there are certainly names on the trade market that can also add to those options for the Jays.
Yeah. I mean, now with Carrasco being off the board, like, you know, that takes another option away. This is a team that needs to get better at pitching, the Toronto Blue Jays. And this is, you know, it's funny, like when we talk about this offseason, so many of the premier free agents are position players. So we naturally just end up talking about, you know, how DJ LeMahieu would fit, or, you know, putting George Springer in the outfield. And, oh, if you miss on Springer, maybe you grab Jackie Bradley Jr. And, you know, maybe Colton Wong in the infield. And, hey, JT Realmuto would make you a lot better behind the dish. Like, hey, somebody's got to throw the ball. Somebody's got to pitch. And the Blue Jays did not pitch well enough last season, and they are not yet deep enough as in terms of starting pitching. Like they didn't necessarily have a breakout starter this year who showed up to the majors and just was immediately rolling and fulfilling their potential. Like Nate Pearson, a little rocky. We all expect he's going to be much, much better in the future. And I'm still very high on Nate Pearson. Like I think he's going to be like exceptional the big league level, but he's clearly still making that transition, right? And getting used to big league, to big league hitters. You know, Thomas Hatch looked really good. You know, you'd probably prefer that he was starting the year at AAA and a depth starter for you and not necessarily in your rotation to begin the season. So the Blue Jays are going to need to add some pitching, one more starter at least on top of Robbie Ray, if not two, and definitely some bullpen help as well. And the options in free agency, at least kind of like the premier options, have kind of bled away to where it's just Bauer right now. And then there is kind of a group of everyone else. So I think you're right. I think it would have to come via trade if the Blue Jays were going to really upgrade significantly there. But I'm just not sure where those opportunities might lie right now.
Yeah. And also since we last recorded, of course, we've seen the Padres go out and add Blake Snell and Yu Darvish just a week ago, I think. It feels like way longer.
Yeah,
but seriously. They've gone out and made some very significant additions. Darvish had a 12-team no trade list. This is not necessarily official or confirmed, but one presumes with a fair degree of logical certainty behind that the Blue Jays were on that list because they were before, and that just kind of fits. So that's an opportunity that doesn't seem as fully available to them. They are going to have to find something though. I mean, to your broader point, this team, like, they had a real run prevention problem. They allowed, I think it was, only three or four teams allowed more runs than the Blue Jays this year. So they really do need to improve their pitching. And Zagano could have been a piece of that. You look around, they obviously are looking at guys who can help on both sides of the ball, like a Real Muto, like a Springer. Those guys would help. Those guys would fit. Ha-Seong Kim would have been a fit in that department, potentially, depending on what you think of his defense. Another guy who ended up with the Padres. It's a great week for them. They are at some point, the Jays need to add to their pitching staff in a meaningful way, not just one.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. I wanted to touch on Ha-Seong Kim, who, like, yeah, as you mentioned, it feels like a long time ago. It wasn't that long ago. Ha-Seong Kim ended up with the Padres. We are led to believe that Blue Jays were very involved in that and made a strong offer there. Again, it's like you said, right? They like a player to a point, and to an extent and to an upper limit. And, it seems like they didn't get beyond where San Diego went. Maybe Ha-Seong Kim and his family just preferred the West Coast. Maybe they just preferred to be in San Diego. Like, if I were him, putting myself in his shoes, and it's like, hey, this is a team that is getting really good, is like a legitimate World Series contender in the NL, is on the West Coast, so I'm closer to home in Korea, and I get to live in San Diego, which is just a wicked place to live, and the weather's beautiful, and there's beaches, and everything's wonderful. Pretty good case, right?
Can't argue with him.
If it was comparable between San Diego and Toronto, I personally, just thinking about it from his perspective, I would probably choose San Diego as well. So I think Toronto is going to have to go above and beyond for that. But, I think that he would have just been a great fit with this team, considering his age, his youth, considering his athleticism, considering he plays various positions. I mean, he's everything the Blue Jays like, athletic, versatile. He's got that like explosive swing at the plate that the Blue Jays like, and you could have fit him into your lineup in a variety of ways. He wouldn't have cut you off from anything. And I don't know that we've seen the actual terms yet of his deal, but they I don't think they would have been prohibitive to the Blue Jays doing anything else. So I just personally like coming into this offseason, I was kind of looking at, Real Muto and Kim as the two guys that, like, man, that would be a really, really good offseason if they got those two guys, and then, a Ray and a Walker or whatever, right? But, like, if those two guys are kind of the center of it, I think those would have been really good moves. Blue Jays missed out on Kim. Padres are going to be really good. The Mets are going to be really good. How the Blue Jays upgrade remains to be seen.
Yeah, and the Jays want to insert themselves into that, tier of ascending teams, right, where the Padres clearly, I think they've done it. I think that they are in that tier of the National League's elite right now with the Dodgers and Atlanta. The Mets, I think, you know, they're on their way. I don't know if they're quite there. I haven't totally gotten a feel for what their overall projections look like, but you know, they look like a playoff team, that's for sure. Oh, yeah. And I think the Jays still have a chance to do that. Ha-Seong Kim would have helped them. I think, you know, when I look at the Padres, the deal that I think would have fit best for the Jays would have been Darvish. It just doesn't seem like that was a possibility. So, you know, there are going to be some of those missed opportunities. And you know, this isn't a surprise, right? Like in the course of an off season, let's say a couple hundred players end up in new spots, yeah, and
you're not going to get everyone.
You're not going to get everyone, right? Like, yeah, and maybe a couple dozen All-Stars change teams. And, you know, the Jays are going to be in on every one of the All-Stars that changes teams this winter, but they're even in a good scenario, they're going to miss out on 85% of them, you know? And so, and that's not just the Blue Jays. You know, I obviously don't follow other teams quite as closely, but you see frustration from other fan bases and you see these responses where it's like, oh, the Red Sox always miss, or, you know, Team X always, yeah, misses. Well, not always, but usually every team misses. So the Blue Jays are usually going to miss, and it can't be always. They do have to upgrade. And again, like if they haven't upgraded whenever spring training starts and, you know, it's time to start for the season, we'll be having a different conversation. But right now, almost everyone's available. The possibility's there. They haven't done anything, but they still have all those options. So it's still like they're still in this like neutral zone, basically.
No, you're right. We're such like prisoners to the moment, right? Like it's everything's in this like vacuum of Lindor and of Kim. And like when you really do pull it out and like look at the broader view of the offseason, like what percentage of like league-wide offseason business would you say has occurred to this point? 10, 15, yeah, you know? Yeah. Think about, yeah, all the players that have like your top, you know, five players in the market, like Bauer, Springer, yeah, LeMahieu, Real Muto, and one that I'm forgetting are like unsigned, you know, like the Springer, or I probably already said Springer.
Bauer, Springer, Real Muto, and LeMahieu.
And LeMahieu. Yeah. Unsigned, yeah, you know, like haven't gone anywhere. So, yeah, you know, there's still like some of the biggest business of the offseason is still to be done. What we've seen is a lot of trades and a lot of transactions from teams that frankly are shedding salary. Yeah. The Cubs dumping salary, Cleveland dumping salary, right? Like the Rays shedding Blake Snell's salary. So that's what we've seen to this point, is a lot of transactions on the trade market, but we haven't seen any of the big, you know, free agent fish be caught to this point. So, you know, it like very much reminds me of like when was Hyunjin Ryu signed? December 28th or something like that. Yeah. Like it reminds me of the discussions that were occurring on December 27th. You know, just, Blue Jays missed on this guy and they missed on that guy.
Yeah.
And they didn't get this guy and they're all talk and they're not going to do anything. I still, as I sit here today on Thursday, January 7th at 5:59 PM Eastern time, looking at you on Zoom, believe, yeah, the Blue Jays are going to come away with a very impressive player in free agency. Yeah. I still fully believe that.
I think so
still
too.
Believe they're going to make a very large commitment in free agency.
Yeah.
It just hasn't happened yet.
I agree with you. Now, us thinking that doesn't make it true, and that it also doesn't, you know, it's not time to criticize the Blue Jays. It's not time to applaud the Blue Jays. It's just, yeah, you know, we're just kind of waiting to see what happens still, because it's kind of similar to the way things were on October 1st.
No, totally. We're just kind of like following the breadcrumbs and like seeing, yeah, you know, looking at footprints. All right, so the Blue Jays were here and the Blue Jays were there, and we just haven't quite gotten to where, you know, they're going to end up. So
yeah,
you wait. Like if at the end of this offseason, if like it is the, you know, Hyunjin Ryu is on the mound, rubbing up the baseball, about to throw the first pitch of the 2021 season for the Toronto Blue Jays, and they have not made like a significant addition, we're going to criticize them. We're going to say the Blue Jays had a very real opportunity here to get better. They had money to spend. They had prospect capital to use. They had opportunities around the diamond to make the field better. They had real holes they needed to address, real issues they needed to address, and they didn't do that. And that was a missed opportunity, and we'll say that. But we can't say that here on January 7th. We're still in the middle of it. We are prisoners to the moment right now. Yeah. Things are still happening. Trevor Bauer had a phone call with the Blue Jays just 7 days ago. on New Year's. He's on Zoom with Pete Walker. You know, I promise you that Pete Walker has been on Zoom calls with more than one free agent pitcher this offseason. The Blue Jays are talking to a lot of guys. They're not going to get all of them. Maybe that means that they get Bauer. Maybe they don't get Bauer and they trade for Castillo. We don't know yet. But I do think that, like, at the end of this, when Hyunjin Ryu is rubbing up that baseball, that you are going to see some different players standing behind him or sitting in the bullpen or sitting in the dugout ready to start game two or game three who aren't there right now, who are, like, real impact players who are going to help this team win games.
Totally agree. I mean, their third baseman is not going to be some minor league free agent. You know, it's their third starter is probably not going to be Robbie Ray. I mean, they're probably going to find someone who slots ahead of him. Their third reliever in the bull, like, I don't even know who that would be right now, but, like, they're going to have someone beyond Romano Baraki. Like, they're going to have more depth in the bullpen. That, to me, those are certainties, and I have no idea what it looks like. We can tell you, you know, to some extent, which players the Blue Jays like, but it's a long process. And again, there's another discussion to be had around whether it should be this long. But
yeah,
right now we're just in it, and you know, this is
it's the reality of the structures of the game, right? Like, there not being a salary cap and a salary floor, and of, you know, teams having way, way more of the leverage with, you know, in this market, and, like, you would have to, you know, there'd have to be some serious upheaval, and maybe we'll get a little bit of that in the next CBA.
Yeah,
maybe that's gonna take a work stoppage for that to happen. I don't know. But, like, yeah, the way things stand right now, we all wish it would move quicker. This has been an especially slow off season. And I, you know, I don't know that it's gonna, that the trades that we're seeing are gonna necessarily spark any free agent activity. Maybe a bit. I don't know. If I'm a free agent right now, I'm still waiting for more teams to have some budget certainty, right? And to have some revenue certainty and to know, okay, when are games going to start? How many fans are we going to have in our ballpark? What kind of revenues can we expect? What kind of money are we going to make? Then how much can we spend on payroll? Like, the reason why the Blue Jays have been able to be as aggressive early on as they have been is they separated out payroll from revenue. Like, they said, like, hey, like, look, didn't make any revenue and 2020, not expecting to make much in 2021, but ownership is letting us spend on payroll anyway, regardless of what our revenue is. That's not the case for most teams. For most teams, like, payroll is directly tied to revenue, and they don't know what their revenues are going to be. Now, vaccines get more prevalent, and MLB, like, has a very real idea of what the season's going to look like and when games are going to be played, how many fans are going to be in ballparks. That could change things. And then maybe all of a sudden teams are going to jump back in. So if I'm a player right now or a representative of a player, I'm waiting for some more of that certainty before I, you know, jump at the Blue Jays being the only team in the market right now that are really going to be splashing around any money.
You know, it would be interesting because the Mets have been right along with them for so much of the offseason. It would be interesting if the Blue Jays kind of become that lone team out there. I don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, we'll see what happens. Like, the Mets, they could blow past their self-imposed 190 and go to 210. But, you know, the Jays are in a really interesting spot right now. They really are.
What'd you make of, just to wrap up, Liam Hendricks being spotted at the Blue Jays facility in Dunedin? Another thing that's happened recently that we haven't touched on.
I mean, really interesting, I think, and great reporting by Shy right there to spot Liam Hendricks in Dunedin. Obviously, Hendricks is interested in seeing the new facility because he would have seen the old one before, having been a member of the Jays two times already. So he wanted to see the new facility, apparently, and that's a sign that the Blue Jays' interest is at least to some extent reciprocated, because you're not making that drive from Fort Myers, where he lives, to Dunedin unless you have a purpose. That's not necessarily just a drive you're going to take at a moment's notice or just for the pure sake of that drive, as you know, Arden. So yeah, I think that it's really interesting. I think he'd be a great fit. I mean, I think he would really help this team, and he'd be expensive, but good players cost a lot of money.
They do. That facility is, like, a really interesting selling point for the Blue Jays this offseason. So I'm not surprised that they would want to show it off to him in person. I feel like maybe even as soon as next week, we're going to be getting some images of it. We're going to be getting to see it just from some of the players that I've spoken to who have been through there, been working out there. Like the reviews are, you know, rave, like through the roof, like guys, you know, are, you know, ecstatic about this place, and they should be. It's a brand new facility designed like specifically to give them every tool and resource that they need as professional athletes, you know, in terms of training, conditioning, recovery, rehabilitation, you know, sports science, you know, studying video, things like that, like biomechanical tools. I mean, it's all there. And, you know, apparently from what I've been told, it's extremely impressive. So it's an interesting selling point for, you know, a guy like Hendricks who, you know, isn't just going to be using that facility in the off seasons. And you mentioned, you know, this signing Hendricks is like at least 3 years, I would think, maybe even four, but isn't only going to be using it in the off season and in spring training, but for this season in particular, like might be using it into the regular season.
Yeah.
Like Blue Jays players might be working out there the first couple months of the regular season and making use of what's available there. Because, you know, there still aren't necessarily major league adequate gyms available at the actual stadium in Dunedin. So it's probably, if the Blue Jays are playing in Dunedin and then, you know, to begin this year, you likely see a scenario where they're, you know, working out and doing a lot of their work over at the complex side and then just taking a bus or driving over to the ballpark in Dunedin to play their games. So, you know, that's, you know, it's an interesting selling point for the Blue Jays this, this season. It's really interesting like thing for the Blue Jays going forward in terms of selling young players on the program, in terms of developing, helping guys get better. You know, I think it's going to be a big competitive advantage, like once it is up and running, and it very much has been this off season with like a number of camps being held there for young players and a lot of development time that was missed out on this season being made up for. I wrote about that at sportsnet.ca. So, you know, it's interesting that he was there. I don't, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of competition for Liam Hendricks. And again, it'll bump up to the point where you're going to be rational on this free agent and finish third, or are you going to go above and beyond? Hendricks is really, really good. It's the best reliever available.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's probably going to take for the Blue Jays, like there's not going to be a discount here. It's going to be, I would think, if he has multiple bidders, like tacking on a fourth year type of deal.
Would you go 4 years if you were the Jays?
It's always dangerous, man. Yeah. As a reliever, right? Like 4 years for a relief pitcher. And like, you know, Hendricks is a guy that you would bet on because he has been so, so, so good. He was like used quite aggressively by Oakland, which would like be, you know, make me nervous. Like you're always nervous about a free agent deal, but then you look at like kind of the usage in Oakland. So, you know, if I'm the Blue Jays, I'd be wanting to run my battery of tests on his arm and just kind of see where he's at. And what kind of durability you can expect going forward. Like that's the biggest thing in a free agent reliever contract, I think, is like durability. Like, are you going to be able to take the mound regularly and be at your best? Cause there's no denying Liam Hendricks' stuff. It's incredible. Some of the best in baseball.
Oh yeah.
So he just needs to be healthy enough to use it consistently and use it on back-to-back days. Like you can even, I forgot about this. So this is how stacked the 2015 Blue Jays team was. Liam Hendricks was on the 2015 Blue Jays and on their playoff roster. And there was a game in the ALCS, I don't know if you remember, when Dickey got like rocked and didn't make it out of like the first or second inning. And Liam Hendricks came in and threw like an absurd amount of pitches in relief and like saved them in a series they eventually lost, but like saved their pitching staff in a really big way in like game three or game four of the ALCS, and through, you know, like one of these like 60 pitch outings that he seems to, you know, with Oakland, we're seeing like these 49 pitch outings, and you know, he's
former starter, right?
You know, to be doing that out of the bullpen with like inconsistent usage and not necessarily being built up to that degree. Like this is a guy who, you know, has been kind of pushed to the limits for not just the last couple of years, but for a while now. So I guess what I'm kind of getting around here is you want to be pretty sure about the durability if you're going in for 4 years on a guy.
Yeah. Just for fun, I'd say my offer would be 40 over three. So
okay,
now maybe that's too rational. Maybe I would finish third on him as well. I don't know, but that's where I would land.
Yeah. What do you think about, you know, the Blue Jays going to four for Liam Hendricks?
I mean, it, you know, it's their, if they want to do it, like it would it would make them a better.
You're throw that question at me and make me answer it, and you're gonna.
Well, I mean, I kind of gave you my answer is like I would say that's where I think would be the right kind of spot. It would be 40/3. So if Houston's offering him 48/4, you kind of say, all right, you know,
right.
Good luck in Houston.
What I still don't understand is how Brad Hand passed through waivers at 1 year, $10 million.
I agree. I don't think he should have. And I think, you know, we're kind of seeing now that teams have been so slow to get their finances in order. I really think that at that time, teams were just not ready for it. I really believe that. So I think Brad Hand's going to sign for more than $10 million. You know, Blake Treinen got 17 and a half. Blake Treinen, like, I know he was good. Blake Treinen's not that good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, his strikeout to walk ratio was like 2-1. You know, right. He's not a totally game changing reliever.
He was non-tender a year ago.
Yes. And I mean, and good for Blake Treinen. That's unreal. Yeah. But I think, for Brad Hand, I think he's a better pitcher, or at least has been a better pitcher, probably projects to be a better pitcher than Blake Treinen. So, I think Blake Treinen should do okay.
Yeah. It was like one of those head scratchers for me that makes me think like there's got to be something, you know, with the medicals or something, but it doesn't seem like that's the case from what we understand. I don't know. Like it's just one of those weird ones where it's like not even the Dodgers were like, sure. Yeah. $10 million. Right. Like a team that's always, you know, trying to like build out its bullpen with guys like that. It's a 1 year deal at $10 million. Like worst comes to worst, you've got a good asset to move at the deadline likely.
It is a weird one. It's among many weird things in this offseason.
Okay.
That's for
sure. Some dominoes are falling. They aren't falling towards Toronto Blue Jays at this point, but it doesn't mean that they will not at some point. And we'll be here to talk about it when they ultimately do. That's Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Our producers this week were Michael Mayers and Mike Tassoni. I want to thank you, as always, for listening. Talk to you next time on At The Letters.